Imagine taking a high-end gaming PC, strapping it to a heavy metal chassis, baking it in 110-degree Texas heat, and then just vibrating it over potholes at 70 miles per hour.
Right, which sounds absolutely brutal.
It is, but I mean, that is essentially what you are doing to a modern luxury European car every single day.
Oh, completely.
We often buy these cars, you know, we see that famous emblem on the steering wheel, we hear that satisfying heavy thud when the door closes, and we just assume we've bought a tank. We assume a premium price tag equals absolute invincibility.
Yeah, and it is such a common illusion. I mean, we equate European engineering with this sort of rugged, unshakable fortress.
Exactly.
But the reality of modern automotive design is, well, it's entirely different.
Yeah.
We really have to stop looking at these vehicles as just mechanical objects made of pistons and gears.
Right, they're more than that now.
Much more. They are incredibly sophisticated, interconnected digital ecosystems. Basically, they are adaptive computer networks that just happen to have wheels.
Wow, that's a great way to put it.
And the precision that makes them handle beautifully, you know, and ride so quietly is the exact same characteristic that makes them highly vulnerable if they are misunderstood.
Okay, let's unpack this because we have a fantastic source today that pulls back the curtain on this exact vulnerability.
Yes, we do.
We're doing a deep dive into a comprehensive service and strategy guide from Autoscope. Now, they are an independent European auto shop focusing specifically on Mercedes C-Class repair, and they operate out of Dallas, Plano, and White Rock in North Texas.
And their insights are incredibly detailed.
They really are. The insights in this guide really challenge how we think about car ownership, because before we even pop the hood, we have to look at the battlefield.
Right, the environment.
Yeah. If you are sitting in stop-and-go traffic on I-635 right now, your car is secretly fighting a brutal war against the environment. Driving in a Dallas summer commute isn't just getting from point A to point B. It's a relentless thermal stress test for your car.
A very severe one.
But I mean, I look at a beautifully built German engine, and my first instinct is to think, wait, is it really that fragile? Can a local weather pattern actually break this machine?
What's fascinating here is the sheer physics of what happens to a highly engineered digital ecosystem in extreme conditions. The Autoscope guide specifically highlights North Texas as a major mechanical stressor.
Just because of the heat.
Mostly the heat, yeah. Let's look at it. When you are sitting in heavy traffic in Dallas or Plano during the summer, the ambient temperature radiating off the asphalt is just punishing.
Oh, it's miserable.
And that heat doesn't just make your air conditioning work harder. It actually attacks the chemistry of the vehicle.
Wait, the chemistry? Like what?
Take the battery, for instance. Extreme heat literally evaporates the vital liquid electrolytes inside the battery casing.
No way. It just boils off.
Essentially, yes.
Yeah.
And it accelerates the corrosion of the internal grids. And remember, the battery is the heart of the car's entire computer network.
Right. Without power, the network dies.
Exactly. Because of that specific environmental attack, the guide notes that you are looking at battery degradation and necessary replacement every 3 to 4 years,
Wow.
which is much faster than most people expect.
So the environment is literally boiling off the life support system for the car's computers.
Not as much.
And it's not just the static heat, is it? I mean, it's the constant temperature swings, right? You have the engine getting blazing hot and then cooling all the way down overnight.
Yes, and that brings in thermal expansion. A Mercedes engine is an assembly of completely different materials. You've got aluminum engine blocks, steel bolts, plastic sensor housings, rubber seals.
And they all react differently to heat.
Exactly. Every single one of those materials expands and contracts at a totally different rate when exposed to those wild temperature swings.
So they're just grinding against each other.
In a microscopic way, yes. Over time, those microscopic movements create fatigue. The rubber hardens, the plastic becomes brittle, and the seals begin to micro tear. And when you combine that with the lack of airflow from sitting in heavy traffic, meaning the radiator can't effectively cool the engine, what you consider to be a normal daily commute is actually classified mechanically as severe duty.
That is wild. And, you know, the pavement itself is throwing punches too. The guide mentions how mixed urban and suburban road conditions relentlessly attack the suspension.
They absolutely do.
And let's be real, we don't always think of suspension as a wear and tear item, like, say, brake pads. We just assume the metal parts are fine.
But we really should think of it that way, especially with the C-Class. That car is engineered to provide a very specific, smooth ride while still maintaining sharp handling.
Right, the luxury feel.
Yeah. And to achieve that, the suspension is incredibly complex. It uses components like control arm bushings.
What exactly is a bushing?
You can think of a bushing as the rubber cartilage between the metal bones of your car's suspension.
Okay, rubber cartilage, got it.
Every pothole, every uneven expansion joint on the highway, it compresses and tears at that rubber cartilage. Eventually, the fluid inside some of those bushings leaks out, or the rubber tears completely.
And then what happens?
Suddenly, you have metal-on-metal vibration. That throws off the alignment, ruins your tires, and just degrades the entire handling profile of the vehicle.
So if the environment is doing all this invisible damage, baking the batteries, tearing at the suspension cartilage, fatiguing the engine seals, how does the car actually start to die? Like, where do the defenses break down first?
Well, the cascade usually starts deep inside.
Right. The guide outlines some incredibly specific internal failures. Let's look at the turbochargers. The symptoms they list are things like sluggish acceleration, exhaust smoke, or an abnormal whistling noise.
That whistling noise is a huge red flag.
I want to know the why here. What is actually happening mechanically when a turbo starts whistling?
Well, a turbocharger's job is to force highly pressurized air into the engine to create more power. To do that, the turbine inside spins at well over 100,000 revolutions per minute.
100,000. That is insane.
It is. It operates under immense pressure and intense heat. So if one of those rubber or metal seals we just talked about starts to fail due to thermal fatigue.
The severe duty wear and tear.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Or if carbon buildup throws the turbine slightly off balance, that highly pressurized air starts escaping through the tiny gaps.
Oh, I see.
And that escaping high pressure air is exactly what creates that high-pitched whistling sound.
So it's basically a teapot screaming.
That's a great analogy. And if you ignore that sound, the turbine blades can eventually strike the metal housing, sending metal shrapnel directly into the engine block.
That sounds catastrophic.
It is.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because while a mechanical failure like a blown turbo is easy to visualize, the guide points out that electrical issues are actually one of the most common repair categories for these vehicles.
They are everywhere.
We are talking about glitches in the command system, which is basically the central nervous system and infotainment screen of the car, or things like dashboard warning lights or faulty sensors.
Right.
It feels like we are still treating maintenance like it's 1995. In 1995, a broken part was just a broken part. Today, a broken part is a virus in a network.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, you're describing the concept of a cascade of failure.
A cascade of failure.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is the single most important concept to grasp about modern luxury vehicles. Because the Mercedes C-Class relies on interconnected control modules, a single unaddressed issue absolutely will not stay isolated.
Like a bad string of holiday lights.
Exactly. Let's look at the mass airflow sensor and the oxygen sensor. The mass airflow sensor is the engine's breathing monitor. It measures the air coming in.
Okay.
And the oxygen sensor is the exhaust sniffer. It measures what's going out.
And they are constantly talking to the car's central computer to balance the fuel, right?
Exactly. Now, imagine the oxygen sensor starts failing because it's been degraded by heat.
Yeah.
It starts lying to the engine control module.
Lying how?
It tells the computer, hey, the engine's running too lean. We need more fuel. So the computer obediently dumps extra unneeded fuel into the engine.
Oh, no.
Yeah. That rich fuel mixture doesn't burn completely, which creates thick black soot. Carbon buildup.
Which goes where?
That carbon coats the inside of the engine, clogs the exhaust valves, and eventually cakes onto the delicate blades of the turbocharger.
The one spinning at 100,000 RPMs?
Right. The turbo loses its balance, the seals blow, and the turbo dies.
So a single sensor, which probably costs a few hundred dollars, just assassinated a major engine component because the computer trusted bad data.
Precisely.
The dominoes just fell right through the engine day.
And that is why simply swapping a part doesn't work anymore. If a mechanic just sees a fault code for a misfire and changes the spark plugs without realizing the oxygen sensor is the root cause creating the carbon buildup, the cascade continues.
The new spark plugs will just foul up in a month.
Exactly. You have to diagnose the network, not just the symptom. We see this exact same cascade effect in the transmission, too.
Right. The guide lists warning signs for the transmission. Things like delayed gear engagement, jerky shifting, fluid leaks.
Right. So the transmission in these cars uses complex hydraulic valve bodies controlled by, again, electronic modules.
More computers.
Always. Oh. Over time, the transmission fluid degrades from heat and sheer mechanical stress. It loses its viscosity, basically its thickness.
Okay.
When the fluid thins out, the electronic solenoids can't apply the right hydraulic pressure to shift the gears smoothly. That creates a slight hesitation or a jerk.
Which people probably just ignore.
All the time.
Okay.
But if you ignore that jerk, the internal clutches start slipping and burning.
Hmm.
What could have been a simple transmission fluid service turns into a catastrophic failure, requiring a complete rebuild.
Okay, so if one relatively cheap sensor or a breakdown in fluid viscosity can trigger a complete system meltdown, if that is the reality of the engineering, how do we step in to stop that chain reaction?
You have to be proactive.
Right. The Autoscope Guide shifts from these terrifying mechanical cascades into strategy and economics. They lay out a very specific preventative maintenance schedule for North Texas.
Which is vital because factory maintenance manuals often assume ideal driving conditions.
And we know Dallas traffic is not ideal.
Far from it. The Autoscope intervals are adapted for the reality of severe duty.
They recommend brake inspections every 10,000 to 15,000 miles, transmission service around 40,000 to 60,000 miles, and annual cooling system checks.
All crucial.
But the one that really jumps out at me is the oil change. They're recommending oil changes every 5,000 to 7,000 miles.
Yes, see.
I look at that 5,000-mile recommendation, and my immediate cynical thought is, oh, they just want me in the shop to upcharge me. Modern synthetic oil is supposed to last 10,000 or even 15,000 miles.
I hear that a lot.
Prove to me this isn't just a badge tax for having a Mercedes emblem on the hood.
This raises an important question about how we define the role of oil in a modern engine. In a turbocharged vehicle, the engine oil is doing a lot more than just lubricating pistons.
What else is it doing?
It is acting as a critical liquid cooling system. We established earlier that the turbocharger spins at over 100,000 RPMs and gets incredibly hot.
Right.
Well, the oil flows through the center of that turbo to carry the heat away.
So the oil is essentially absorbing the brunt of that thermal stress.
Yes. Now imagine you've been driving in stop-and-go Dallas traffic. The turbo is screaming hot. You park the car and turn off the engine.
Okay.
The oil stops flowing and just sits inside that blistering hot turbocharger housing.
Yep.
If the oil is old and degraded, it literally fries.
It cooks inside the turbo.
Exactly. It bakes into tiny, hard, abrasive carbon rocks. This is a process called coking.
Oh, wow.
Those hard carbon deposits block the oil passages. So the next time you start the car, the turbo gets no lubrication and it treads itself.
So pushing your oil change to 10,000 miles just because the synthetic oil bottle says you can, that completely ignores the reality of the turbocharger cooking the oil after every commute.
Exactly. And this is where the economics of proactive ownership become crystal clear.
The math doesn't lie.
No, it doesn't. Let's look at the numbers from the guide. A minor sensor replacement might be $150 to $500. A routine brake service is roughly $400 to $1,200.
Okay, pretty standard.
But contrast that with the major systems. A turbocharger replacement runs $1,500 to over $4,000. A transmission repair can range from $300 to well over $5,000.
So you're asking the listener, are you saving pennies by delaying routine maintenance, only to spend thousands on catastrophic failures down the road?
Exactly. You're paying for a slightly more frequent oil change, maybe $150, to prevent the oil from coking and destroying a $4,000 turbocharger. It is not a badge tax. It is the uncompromising math of high-tolerance engineering.
It's a fascinating paradigm shift. You are either paying a small premium for maintenance now or a massive penalty for repairs later.
Very true.
The guide points out that if you follow the strict preventative strategy, a C-Class can easily push past 150,000 or even 200,000 miles.
Oh, easily.
The machine is perfectly capable of longevity, but only if the human strategy matches the machine's engineering. Which leads us to the final and perhaps most important piece of the puzzle.
The execution.
Right. If we buy into this proactive strategy, who holds the wrench?
That is the ultimate bottleneck. You can have the best strategy in the world, but if the technician misdiagnoses the cascade of failure, you still lose.
The guide tackles the classic battle between the dealership and the independent specialist.
It's a big debate.
I think the default assumption for anyone who buys a luxury European car is that you absolutely have to go back to the dealership.
A lot of people feel that way.
Going to the dealer is like calling the manufacturer's IT help desk. They're going to follow a corporate script, reboot your system, and probably recommend replacing entire hardware assemblies because that's what the manual says.
Right.
But going to a specialist like Autoscope feels more like hiring a hacker who knows the exact backdoor into why your specific system crashed. But the fear is, does skipping the dealership mean you are getting substandard care? Does it void that official care the car needs?
It's actually the opposite in many cases. The distinction is about the business model as much as the mechanics.
How so?
Dealerships operate on volume and standardized processes. They cover a massive range of models, from entry-level sedans all the way to commercial sprinter vans.
Right, they see everything.
Independent specialists like Autoscope narrow their focus. Because they aren't bound by dealership turnaround quotas, they can spend the diagnostic time necessary to track down that underlying oxygen sensor issue.
Instead of just throwing a new turbo on a car and hoping the problem goes away.
But don't the dealerships have a monopoly on the computers? If these cars are digital networks, how can an independent shop even talk to the car?
That's a common misconception. A true specialist invests heavily in the exact same factory-level diagnostic architecture.
Really?
Yes. Shops like Autoscope utilize systems equivalent to the Mercedes Star Diagnostic System. They can pull the exact same proprietary fault codes from the network that the dealer can.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
But having the computer is only half the battle. The other half is generational knowledge.
Meaning what, exactly?
A technician at a specialized shop has seen the evolution of the C-Class over decades. They know that a specific fault code on a 2018 model means something entirely different than that same code on a 2012 model.
Ah, okay. And the guide mentions something crucial too, coding and programming.
Right. This goes back to the car being a network. If you replace the command system module or an engine control unit, you can't just bolt it in and turn the key.
The car won't recognize it.
The car's network will flat out reject it. You have to digitally introduce the new part to the network.
Like pairing a Bluetooth device.
Sort of. You have to code it, essentially giving it an IP address and security clearance to talk to the other modules. A specialized independent shop has the software capability to perform those updates and module codings, completely eliminating the need to visit the dealer.
And Autoscope backs this up with some serious institutional weight. I mean, we aren't talking about a guy with a wrench in a home garage.
Not at all.
The guide notes they have over 40 years of experience specifically with European models. They back up their diagnostic confidence with a 3-year, 36,000-mile labor warranty.
That's huge.
It is. They offer free shuttle services from your home or office during the week, and every service comes with a courtesy hand wash and vacuum. They are intentionally structured to remove the friction of getting the car serviced in Dallas, Plano, and White Rock. So you really have zero excuses for delaying that preventative care.
And that level of service builds transparency. When the technician can show you the diagnostic readout and explain how the Texas heat degraded the battery.
And how that low voltage corrupted the data on the network.
Right, and how that caused the dashboard warning lights.
Yeah.
You aren't just paying a mysterious repair bill. You are being educated on the health of your asset. You are actively managing the ecosystem.
So what does this all mean? We've traced the hidden life of this machine from the outside in. We saw how the brutal heat and stop-and-go traffic of North Texas acts as an invisible hammer, boiling batteries and fatiguing tightly wound metal parts.
The severe duty reality.
Exactly. We explored the terrifying cascade of failure, realizing that a single lying sensor can convince the car's computer to slowly suffocate a $4,000 turbocharger.
The domino effect.
We debated the strict economics of prevention, proving that specialized oil isn't a scam, it's a liquid heat shield. And finally, we saw why true expertise isn't about a logo on a dealership building, but about finding the specialists who can actually read the car's digital DNA.
The main takeaway is that precision engineering offers incredible performance, but it revokes your right to be a passive owner. You simply cannot wait for a symptom to become a catastrophe.
It's universal, really. Whether you are maintaining a luxury sedan, managing a team, or looking after your own health, precision requires proactive care. And true expertise always saves you time and money in the long run.
Very well said.
But looking at all of this, it leaves me with a lingering thought. If modern vehicles rely so heavily on these adaptive systems, if a mechanic needs factory software just to introduce a new sensor to the network, and if the oil is basically acting as a coolant for a jet turbine under the hood, at what point are we no longer actually driving a machine?
That is the big question.
Are we just managing a mobile server network? And as these networks become even more complex and self-regulating, how much further will that shift change our relationship with the things we own? It's definitely something to think about the next time you hear that heavy door close.